Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Clary, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is October 20, 2021. We're here on our third of six case on our calendar this morning. A210452, Trueblood versus MMIC Insurance. Counsel, please mute your microphone if you are not speaking. The marshal will be showing a running clock of your time. Please keep an eye on that clock. You will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes at their option for rebuttal. I'll ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. And with that, counsel, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Rodney Glenn Rittner. I am representing Dr. Trueblood, the plaintiff and appellant in the matter. And the reason we're here is because Dr. Trueblood bought an insurance policy from MMIC, who was licensed in the state of Iowa to sell that policy. That policy was used to defend a case in Iowa. Everything relevant to Dr. Trueblood occurred in Iowa, and she's now brought a case because we believe, although this is factual, has nothing to do with doing here, that MMIC basically put the doctor's assets at risk rather than their own, and now an excess judgment was entered. Exactly one of the reasons you have the duty of good faith and fair dealing to look at these lawsuits and try to settle them if you can. The real point here, though, is when we look at the Malkovich test, which I think everyone has agreed that's the test we're going to use to apply. The district court attempted to apply it, and you guys are supposed to, you know, your honors, will be applying that test as well. There are five factors to that test. I honestly don't see where any of them weigh in favor of Minnesota law applying to the matter.
Rittner, I want to focus your attention on factors 4 and 5 of that test, which would be the advancement of the forum's governmental interest and the better rule of law. So in Minnesota, we have long held for many decades that there can be no cause of action for a negligent breach of contract, that extra contractual damages are not available in the absence of an independent tort, independent of the contract. And a malicious or a bad faith motive in breaching a contract is not an independent tort. Now, your client chose Minnesota as the forum in this particular case. So I'm having a hard time understanding why we should be departing from our long-standing, well-settled rule of law in Minnesota with good reason that we do not recognize these kinds of causes of action.
Okay. As far as, you know, the advancement of governmental interests, yes, that is a policy decision. I admit Minnesota has made that decision for cases arising and insurance policies arising within Minnesota. And the JSI case that the respondents cited to talks about that. It was a Wisconsin and Minnesota issue. However, the Supreme Court of Minnesota also recognizes that torts claimants are to be protected. I mean, that's in our original brief. You know, we talked about
that. That's true. That is true. Tort claimants are to be compensated.
Correct.
We also have recognized that there are no torts that arise from a breach of contract, where the contract is the basis of the obligations here. There are no torts that you can that are recognized in this jurisdiction.
I understand that. But when you look at your own case law, I mean, when you say, you know, you just said what you just said of it came out of the contract. And the contract, when you look at, again, the JSI case has the clearest statement of it, of when the contract, when the obligations under the contract arise under a contract written in Iowa, and for claims that arose in Iowa, for a case that arose in Iowa, that, I mean, the court's own language is pretty clear right there. I'm trying to find it. That, you know, it really, it goes back to the whole reasonable expectation. And I think that's the other thing we're talking about when it comes to public policy. What are the expectations of the person? And when Dr. Trueblood entered into that contract, her expectation would be, for a case that's brought in Iowa, I am going to be accorded all of the rights of Iowa if something happens. That Minnesota, MMIC, a Minnesota corporation, when they decide to get licensed in Iowa and sell a policy there, that they are going to be held to the laws of Iowa. So to me, I understand, you know, four and five, we want to get into your policy decision. But when you say the better rule of law, I will simply disagree that Minnesota's rule is the better one. That, again, because of what the Supreme Court has said, you know, tort victims should be compensated. And to just say there is no tort, or at least we're not going to recognize it, to me, that goes against exactly what you're saying. The tort did occur. Okay. If we had filed this in Iowa, there would be no question the tort occurred and they recognize it. So all we're really.
And why is it that you didn't file this case in Iowa?
I don't know. I wasn't a part of that. So I cannot answer that question.
I mean, you're kind of stuck with our governmental interest and the better rule of law as recognized by our court when you file a case in Minnesota, right?
We're stuck with it if you get through the first three factors in the test. And that's why I say, to me, the predictability is the huge one. Because again, you know, according to, again, your own law, you know, excuse me, I'd really like to find that quote if I can figure out where the heck I put it. There it is.
So now I'm intrigued by what you're saying now, that you're saying that, are you saying that certain of these factors should be weighed more heavily than other factors?
One, yes.
And what's the legal basis of that assertion?
Just the mere fact that in some of your cases, you don't even get to the fifth one. You know, they don't even bother to weigh it. They say, well, if the first four get us there, it doesn't matter. And so like the precedent one, you know, as JSI said, precedent is clear that an insurer should expect courts to apply the law of the state where the incidents giving rise to the obligation to defend occurred. There is no question that the incidents giving rise to the incident were in Iowa. The obligation to defend arose out of the malpractice in Iowa. The second factor that the court talks about, maintenance of interstate order, goes the same way. That's one of the two factors that the JSI court looked at. You know, is one, where was the policy written? That's clear. Nobody's even arguing that. It's an Iowa policy regulated by Iowa Department of Insurance. MMIC applied and was licensed here to sell that policy. And when we get to public policy, it's like, I think another public policy is the, you know, bargaining power. You know, if the insurance company wants to write a choice of law to go against this clear precedent that an insurer is going to, should expect the law of the state where the incident occurred, the insured incident, i.e. Iowa occurred, they should be writing that into the policy. If they want to,
that was one of my other questions. I did not see the policy in the record. Is it somewhere in the record?
That I do not know. I apologize, Your Honor. I did get the facts I have or what's here in the brief. I got roped into this. Mr. Rowley was not available and asked me to argue this. All I know is MMIC. I know this because I do medical malpractice in both Minnesota and Iowa. MMIC writes almost half of the policies in Iowa. They are licensed. They are our biggest insurer by, I don't know, at least 8-1 compared to the next highest. And that kind of, to me, again, gets back to the whole public policy of when our doctors buy these policies that are regulated, they haven't gone offshore and bought an offshore policy. Okay, they've bought a regulated policy. And for when your courts say it's clear that an insurer should expect for the law of where the incident occurred, to me, it's just there is no argument that MMIC shouldn't expect this and shouldn't expect Dr. Trueblood and their other insureds to rely upon that.
Counsel, you keep coming back to where the incident occurred. Are you referring to the surgery?
Yeah, it was technically a path read, but yes.
Okay, well, except that this is about claim evaluation, settlement strategy, decision making. I presume whoever brought this case in Minnesota recognized that. Normally, we're worried about forum shopping, but your client chose Minnesota here. And it seems to me the maintenance of interstate order would indicate alone that Minnesota law should be preeminent here. I mean, you chose that forum. It's not about the surgery. It's about the claim evaluation, the settlement strategy, and the decision-making. So I'm having a hard time understanding why you keep coming back to where it happened. I mean, that's the surgery. This isn't an appeal of that verdict.
Correct, Your Honor. The reason I keep coming back to that is this idea that the facts, the incident, should be the claims handling. That is not anywhere in any of the choice of law cases that Minnesota has cited. Again, going back to these, they never mention that as a factor. They mention where was the policy written, and they mention where the incident occurred that gave rise to the obligations under the policy, where the duty to defend, the duty to indemnify arose. Nowhere has any Minnesota court ever said, oh, one of the things to look at is where we're domiciled, where we put our claims adjusters.
But there is evidence that was in the record below, and the district court noted this evidence, that part of the defense strategy originated from Minnesota. Part of the settlement negotiations originated in Minnesota. And so why is it an abuse of discretion or an error of law for the district court to say, well, there's context with Minnesota here. We're going to say that I'm going to say that that factor weighs in favor of applying Minnesota law.
Even if you were going to add a new factor that no previous court of appeal or even a district court in Minnesota has ever applied, i.e. this where the claims adjuster was sitting. Okay, that's a brand new factor. Even if you were going to apply it, you know, looking at these cases, that would then come under the maintenance of interstate order. I don't see how they could come under the predictability, because there is no case that any insured, Dr. Trueblood included, could have possibly looked at to think, oh, they're not going to have to deal with me in good faith and fair dealing. Okay, that law simply doesn't apply. What law was out there says quite the opposite. And so if we're now going to apply this new test, the only place it would apply was maintenance of interstate order. But again, that would even go in direct opposition to what the JSI court relied on when they said there were two factors they considered in determining. And they said, you know what? The factors don't weigh in favor of either. This one's a push. But the reason they said that was one, you know, although JSI, Dr. Trueblood, was in Wisconsin, an Iowa insured with an Iowa policy. So we get factor number one. They said, but we're going to weigh that against the events that gave rise to the obligations was a Minnesota trial, was a Minnesota case with Minnesota plaintiffs. We don't have that here. We have the exact opposite. So even if you applied that test, which again, Dr. Youngblood, I think the Trueblood has the right to rely on, you know, Minnesota's old law, is under that, it's not a push. The only two factors the court considered in that case both weigh to Dr. Trueblood's position, which is Iowa's law on this should apply. Then when we get to the simplification of judicial task, it's a nothing. Obviously, you guys can apply that easily. The district judge can apply it. He even said so. So then we get to the ones that you were asking me about, Your Honor, you know, four and five. And the better rule of law, to me, it's like, in all deference to, you know, what you guys have done for all the years, the problem is when you don't have any real bad faith claim, you get exactly what happens here. You get insurers who have absolutely no risk and they don't care. And they will risk it all because they have no extra contractual obligations. So I think it's a bad rule of law from the public policy standpoint of making sure your insureds get the benefit of their bargain, i.e., I thought I would have, you know, a good faith and fair dealing also included in here. Iowa certainly requires it. You never contracted your way out of it. You didn't point me to any case law that said we weren't going to be held to it. And so to now raise it because we did choose to file it in Minnesota, I think it would go against everything that the doctor thought that she had contracted for. And I see my time. I've got like 20 seconds left. The governmental interest. My time's up.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for a rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chuck Spivak from the mayor here from Minneapolis on behalf of NMI, the insurance company. With Your Honor's indulgence, I'd like to jump straight to some of the case law that was discussed in counsel's argument, because I think that this discussion of two cases will absolutely crystallize why the court's questions and skepticism about the nature of this claim is correct. And the first is the JSI Industries versus Steadfast case, which counsel referenced over and over again as allegedly clearly establishing why Iowa law applies. In fact, just the opposite is true, that and the idea that JSI supports the application of Iowa law could not be farther from the fact. In JSI Industries versus Steadfast Insurance Company, the suits which were commenced against the insured in Minnesota were never defended by the insurance company Steadfast, and those suits were settled by the insureds out of their own pocket without any contribution by the insurer Steadfast. And that is just the opposite of what happened here. In this case, MMI Insurance Company fully defended Dr. Trueblood without reservation of rights. And MMI Insurance Company and the excess carrier fully paid the settlement of the underlying claim without any contribution from Dr. Trueblood.
But doesn't that go to the merits instead of the choice of law issue?
It does go to the choice of law issue, Your Honor, because in JSI Industries, the fact that it was a breach of the duty to defend turned out to be critical to determining the choice of law. And the point I'm making, perhaps in too many words, are that in our case, there's no breach of the duty to defend. There was no breach of the duty to pay indemnity. Dr. Trueblood acknowledges in her complaint that she did not have to pay any money out of her own pocket to resolve this claim. So going back to choice of law, then, what happened in JSI Industries versus Steadfast? And again, in that case, the insurance company did not defend and did not pay any money toward the settlement of the claim. And when the court determined that Minnesota law should apply to that case, it did so because it determined that clear precedent requires that an insurer should expect courts to apply the law of the state where the incidents given rise to the duty to defend occurred. So remember, this is a breach to the duty to defend. The state in which the incidents gave rise to where the breach duty occurred took place in Minnesota, and that's why Minnesota law applies. In this case, the state where the incidents arose giving rise to the present claim for extra contractual tort damages, the settlement authority decisions that were made, the record is undisputed that all of those decisions were made in Minnesota, and that they.
But okay, I understand that, and I'll also point out that JSI is a decision of the United States District Court, one of our state courts. On predictability, how do you respond to Mr. Rittner's argument on predictability? Because here you do, you know, in setting aside JSI and what this federal district court said in JSI and whether we think it's persuasive or not. Everything except for the location of your client about the underlying dispute giving rise to this happened in Iowa. You've got an Iowa doctor getting malpractice insurance in Iowa for procedures happening in Iowa. The slide was read in Iowa and under a policy regulated by the laws of Iowa. So it would seem to me that for predictability, I don't know that Minnesota is the right place for it, aside from who knows why it was brought in Minnesota to begin with. You know, except that we like our own laws and we don't maybe like the laws so much of other states. So if you'd address that, and it also seems that there's a flavor in some of our state court cases, where we're giving broader rights rather than taking rights away. So just if you'd address the predictability, sorry for such a long question.
Not a problem at all, Your Honor. And with respect, Your Honor, I believe you're enunciating the standard wrong when you preface your questions by saying that everything that's of relevance in this case happened in Iowa with the exception of the decisions that were made.
No. I said about the underlying action. Just to be clear, I was not confused. I'm sorry.
In which case, I apologize for suggesting that you were confused. There's two places where we find this answer clearly enunciated. The first is in the district court's opinion itself. With regard to predictability results, the district court said it as well as it can be stated in these circumstances when it said the party should have reasonably expected Minnesota law to apply because, quote, the central concern in this case relates not to appellant's Iowa residence, her Iowa-based malpractice suit, or any coverage, therefore, but whether appellant is entitled to relief in tort for bad faith arising from conduct in Minnesota by a Minnesota insured. So the fact that she's an Iowa doctor, the fact that she was sued in Iowa, that the case was venued in Iowa, the district court got it exactly right when it said that in regard to this claim, a tort-based extra-contractual claim based on settlement-making decisions that were done by Minnesota employees of a Minnesota corporation in Minnesota. The fact that she's an Iowa resident, the fact that her Iowa-based malpractice suit was in Iowa, and that any coverage, therefore, is irrelevant. The only thing that's of interest in determining the predictability of result standard is, what's the central question in this case and where does it arise? And the central question in this case has nothing to do with her underlying residence or her completely resolved at no expense to her underlying malpractice action. But the decisions made by a Minnesota-based corporation, by Minnesota employees done in Minnesota. And the JSI Industries case, admittedly, it's a decision of the Federal District Court, but Judge Magnuson was astute in what he said when he addressed this. With regard to predictability results, or in this case, advancement of the forum's governmental interest, he said that in JSI, that even though the insurance contract was issued in Wisconsin, Minnesota has no interest in advancing Wisconsin's recognition of the tort of bad faith denial of insurance benefits when such a claim is expressly not recognized in Minnesota. Substitute Iowa for Wisconsin in that, and you have further explanation as to why the contacts with Iowa are of little relevance to the five Loeffler factors. I'd also like to point to a case cited by the appellants in their brief in regard to their suggestion that there would be no question that had this case been filed in Iowa, this claim would be allowed to proceed. In fact, the authority cited by the appellants in their brief would lead us to the opposite conclusion. Now, again, this is a district court case, Southern District of Iowa, Jackson versus Travelers, decided in 1988. It's discussed on pages 24 and 25 of the appellant's brief, and we discuss it on pages 21 and 22 of ours. But in essence, this is why this case is important. In that case, the plaintiff was a Nebraska resident injured by while working in Colorado, with a workers' comp policy that was issued by an Iowa workers' comp carrier. And the issue in that case was whether the Iowa workers' comp carrier should be liable in various damages resulting from its delay and denial of treatment of benefits for this Nebraska plaintiff injured on the job in Colorado. And the Iowa District Court applied Iowa law to that claim with a bad faith claims handling, stating that the decisions regarding Mr. Jackson's treatment, he was the underlying Nebraska resident, and benefits were made by Travelers, the insurance company representatives, in Iowa. So that was the justification of applying Iowa law to a Colorado accident involving a Nebraska plaintiff. And that is absolutely analogous to what we have here. In this case, the decisions regarding the settlement of Dr. Trubud's claim were made by MMIC representatives in Minnesota. So assuming that the Southern District of Iowa has correctly predicted what the Iowa Supreme Court would say, even in Iowa, the correct application of law would be Minnesota law, because in this instance, the underlying medical malpractice case is no longer the nexus on which choice of law turns.
That's actually my question, counsel. It seems to me that when I'm looking at this body of authority in measuring the predictability of results, we're talking about what is the predictable law that applies before the wrongful act actually happens. What do the parties expect? And so is the argument really that the parties in this case should expect that Minnesota law is going to apply because the policy is issued by a Minnesota insurer?
And particularly given an action that's commenced in Minnesota. So predictability, not just measured by what the party's expectations would be before a cause of action arises, because before a cause of action arises, you're not going to be able to know what the circumstances are that are going to form the nexus of the claim and how that's going to apply to the five Leffler standards. So in this circumstance, the claim first has to arise. And that claim first arose in Minnesota by a Minnesota commenced action claiming that a Minnesota-based insurance companies, Minnesota-based employees, made Minnesota-based decisions that were tortiously done in bad faith. And with regard to predictability results, again, the district court said it right when it said the party should have expected that Minnesota law should apply, because this claim as pled identified as the central concern, something that didn't relate to the appellant's Iowa residence, to her Iowa-based malpractice suit, but to bad faith arising from conduct in Minnesota by a Minnesota insurer. And so that's why the predictability of results factor clearly favors Minnesota, because the result we're looking at relates to the claim that's pled. And the claim that's pled has nothing to do with the underlying Iowa-based malpractice action. That's completely resolved.
But it does in some ways. I mean, I know you're talking about the bad faith conduct. Is there anything in the record now about what decisions were made where? Were 100% of the decisions made in Minnesota? Do we have any evidence of that at all? And I'm assuming there was a local counsel in Iowa.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think that it's undisputed that the settlement decisions were made in Minnesota. And I would point out this anecdotally, that the claim originally included direct action against the Iowa-based MMIC claims adjuster, Nicole Graziano, who admittedly did not have authority to make decisions, settlement decisions at the levels discussed. And the claim against her was voluntarily dismissed by Dr. Trueblood with prejudice. So, yes, I mean, there was a claims adjuster in Iowa. There were Iowa defense lawyers that were hired to defend the claims. But this action has to do with decisions that were made in Minnesota and whether those decisions were made in bad faith.
And where could I find that in the record?
I don't have the record citation in front of me, but it's well documented in our brief that the claims against Nicole Graziano were dismissed with prejudice voluntarily, and that the parties did not dispute in the arguments before the district court that the decisions concerning settlement flew from authority from Minnesota-based senior claims personnel. In other words, this is not a factual dispute that in any way bore on the Rule 12 motion before the court. It was never argued that the decisions were made by someone in Iowa. It was simply argued that somehow Iowa law should apply because the underlying medical malpractice action was in Iowa.
I'm sorry, finish.
No, I was just going to ramble on a little bit more. Your question.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll ramble on for, no. Is the insurance policy itself in the record?
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor. And frankly, the reason it's not from our standpoint is because this isn't an action on the contract. This is a tort claim based upon bad faith claims handling. It's not an action on the contract.
I think the only reason we're asking is that sometimes there are choice of law provisions in contracts.
Trust me, Your Honor, had there been a choice of law provision that would have favored one over the other, one side would have included it.
Can I just frame this predictability issue in a different way? Is it your contention or is it your position, counsel, that Dr. Trueblood should have expected before this action ever happened that if she were to have been faced with the situation that she eventually found herself in, that she would be directed by folks at the home office in Minnesota with respect to settlement authority? And that would be her reasonable expectation as part of her insurance contract?
Yeah, so Your Honor, I'll answer that question directly, but I have to preface it with the statement that that's not the standard as to what determines predictability of results. The expectation of a policyholder to an insurance policy before any given claim arises. But I would say that MMIC is a Minnesota-based insurer. Dr. Trueblood's sophisticated by the nature of the pedigree of her degrees. The claim against her was substantial, seven-figure demands, and it would have been a reasonable expectation that the authority as to whether to accede to a $2+ million demand was not going to come from the local Iowa claims handler working out of her cubicle. But I need to stress that that isn't the relevant factor as to predictability of results. You need to know what the specific claim is first before you can determine what the party's expectations would be, what they should have reasonably expected at the time they commenced the suit as to which state's law would apply. And in that regard, the trial court got it exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. I see that you're out of time. Mr. Rittner, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
I do, Your Honor. Am I unmuted again? Okay. I would like to respond. First off, as far as this whole predictability thing, because I think that one is tantamount, and I know the way factors are ordered isn't supposed to say which one's the most important, but I think it is to an insured. What they think they're getting by the benefit of their bargain. And this whole idea, it's crystal clear, you know, in the case law, incidents that gave rise to the duty to defend. It's not the incidents that arose after the duty. It's not whether you chose to defend, whether you chose to indemnify, if you chose, how you did it, whether you did it. That is not a factor in determining predictability. The court's been crystal clear. It's incidents that gave rise to the duty. The duty to defend 100% occurred all in Iowa. They sold a policy in Iowa to a person in Iowa who's licensed to practice in Iowa, to treat patients in Iowa, and defend a lawsuit in Iowa. So,
but the claim is, I mean, if I understand it correctly, that the Minnesota insurers engaged in bad faith by not settling the case or not recommending a settlement. And that all happened, that all originated in Minnesota.
The only thing I would dispute on that is Mr. Spivacek himself admitted it didn't originally arise in Minnesota. Okay.
What is it?
The decision as to how to defend and what to do to defend. The actual claims handling originally is all by Graziano, who's in Iowa. Okay. Yes, we dismissed her as an individual, but her actions are still going to be at issue if this case is allowed to proceed.
I mean, when you talk about claims handling, that's a very broad category. I mean, we're talking about a specific part of the way that the claim was handled. And that is, I mean, your allegation, as I understand it, is that the insurer engaged in bad faith in not settling this case, right?
Yes, and everything that led up to why they made that decision. Yes.
And those decisions were made in Minnesota.
The final decision, how the claim is handled, what information they get directing local counsel, what information they want local counsel. I mean, I did insurance defense for 20 years. The claims rep is the one the attorney is working with all the time of what do I need? And please give me your opinion as the settlement value of a case, et cetera.
And all that direction, that, those directions originated from Minnesota, right?
Okay, we haven't been allowed to do all of the discovery. So at this point, I don't know, but no, what we know is Graziano is here and she's the one doing the actual claims handling. It's our understanding. It was only the final decision to basically disregard Graziano's opinion was made up in Minnesota by someone as of right now is unknown and unnamed. I mean, that evidence is not really before the court. We don't know where the final decision was made. They're making an argument based on it, but I don't think there's any actual evidence of it. The evidence we have is crystal clear that all of the incidents that the courts have used in their opinions are the incidents that gave rise to the duties, not how the duty was exercised. How so, whether the duty...
Counsel, let me come back to, and I don't want to keep beating you up here about this, but and the claim could have been brought in Iowa. It was brought in Minnesota.
Correct.
That would seem to be a recognition that it belonged here, arguably. And the predictability of result would seem to be, I'm guaranteed Iowa law, or go to Minnesota and subject myself to Minnesota law. I mean, part of the fact that you could have been brought in Iowa and wasn't, it's hard for me to get past.
Okay. If I could address that, Your Honor, to me, the only factor that would apply to it all is number four. If we choose to file in Minnesota, absolutely, that's going to be, you know, the advancement of the forum's governmental interest. Well, we chose Minnesota as our forum. We recognize number four would absolutely benefit. That would go to Minnesota choice of law. But we made the choice because the other three to us, well, the first two, the predictability and the maintenance of interstate order, I think clearly and strongly by Minnesota's own case law show there is no factor to support a Minnesota choice of law. Okay. It's not in the contract. As he said, if it was there, they would have put it in. Okay. If we had had it the other way, but they're the ones with the benefit. They're the ones who write the contract. Okay. And when you get to this predictability, when you get to the maintenance of interstate order, I mean, so you're saying that if we had chosen to sue in Iowa, how would that, you know, maintain interstate order if you get a different result when we like your test? Okay, predictability, maintenance, simplification, all of those things are, it doesn't matter where we file it.
All right, counsel, I see that your time has expired. Thank you very much. The matter is now submitted and we will issue our